So my name is Alana Hallis, for those of you that don't know me, and I'm at McMaster University. And today I'm going to be telling you about some of our recent work where we've been looking at the entire family of XY pyrochlores. And what we found is that they're very sensitive to the application of chemical pressure. And we take this as evidence that they live in a very rich phase space, and also that they're subject to very strong phase competition. So this work was done as a part of a very large and international collaboration. And I'll quickly just highlight that my supervisors at McMaster are Bruce Golan and Graham Luke, as well as Chris Weave at the University of Winnipeg. And then another person I should mention is Jonathan Godet, who had a large part in each of the projects I'll be talking about. Okay, so I'm going to be discussing phase competition from an experimental standpoint. But I did want to start by acknowledging that a lot of the ideas that motivated our thinking on this topic came from these two theoretical works. And I believe we're going to be hearing about the top paper from Ludovic in his talk tomorrow. And then the other thing I'd like to mention is that this phase diagram comes from this nice paper by Han Yan and Nick Shannon, and I'm going to be making use of it throughout my talk. So this is probably a good opportunity to just give a 30-second definition of what exactly I mean by phase competition. So you can imagine taking a material and by random chance, its exchange parameters happen to place you very close to one of these black phase boundaries. And so you would expect that although its exchange parameters might place it into one state, the proximity of the neighboring state is going to have some influence over its low temperature magnetism, because there's a lot more accessible fluctuations, and so you might expect far more quantum effects in the low temperature magnetism. So experimentally, what would you expect to see if a material did have this strong phase competition? So the first point on this slide is actually really obvious, but it's also very important, which is that if you took a subset or a family of materials that you thought lived in a rich phase space, then you should see a lot of different magnetic ground states. Obviously, there's going to be natural variation in exchange parameters from material to material, and so this should be enough if you're in this rich phase space to put you in different parts of it. Then a second thing you would expect to see is that due to the fluctuations that are going to come from these neighboring phases, these should in general act to destabilize magnetic order. And so you would expect to see a suppression of your magnetic ordering transition. And then a final point, which was really nicely discussed by Tyrell McQueen in his talk earlier today, is that you might expect to see sensitivity to disorder. And so I think this effect in the case of ytterbium titanate could have a very natural explanation for why it has such a strong effect on the low temperature magnetism in terms of phase competition, because if you were at the boundary between two competing phases, then small levels of defects that might otherwise be negligible or unimportant could be enough to move you across a phase boundary or from order to disorder. And I think a very natural extension of this sensitivity to disorder could be a sensitivity to applied pressure. And it's the same sort of logic. When you apply pressure to a system, you contract the lattice, and this is going to modify the exchange couplings in some way. And so if you really were at the precipice between two phases, then this could be just enough to change your magnetic state. So I thought I would just give a really quick mention of this recent work from Edwin Kramarik and Jonathan Godet and Bruce Golan that looks at this effect of applied pressure on ytterbium titanate. I think this ties in really nicely with the overall theme of my talk. So what they did was they took a sample of ytterbium titanate that was stoichiometric and powder, and they looked at it with muon spin relaxation. So this upper panel here was collected with zero applied external pressure. And what they see is that as a function of temperature, there is some gradual increase in the relaxation rate corresponding to slowing spin dynamics, but there's no abrupt change in the form of the relaxation rate as you might expect for a magnetic ordering transition. But then when they take the exact same sample and apply 20 kilobar of external pressure, they see a very dramatic difference in the relaxation rate as a function of temperature. You can see at the lowest temperature here, there's this very steep relaxation. And because it's the full asymmetry that's relaxing, that corresponds to the full volume fraction of the sample. And in this work, the smallest pressure that they applied was 1 kilobar. And even that was enough to partially induce order from this disordered sample. And so in terms of the compressibility of the pyrochlore lattice, this is really a remarkable result, because pyrochlores are highly incompressible. Pressures of this magnitude can barely create a perceptible shift in your lattice parameter. And yet, it is enough to bring you away from a disordered ground state to an ordered ground state. And so I think that this naturally could be explained by phase competition. So moving from externally applied pressure now to chemical pressure, so the XY pyrochlores are going to have our A sites that are erbium and ytterbium. And we're going to start from our favorite non-magnetic B-site, which is titanium. And if we wanted to apply chemical pressure to this system, then we would take that titanium and replace it by a different element that's going to also be non-magnetic, but it's going to have a different size. And so this is going to expand or contract our lattice. And in that way, we think of it naively as applying a chemical pressure. So one thing that we can substitute titanium for is germanium. It's significantly smaller. It contracts the lattice. It brings the rare earths closer together. And that's what we call a positive chemical pressure. And on the other side, we could substitute platinum, which is slightly larger, and tin, which is quite a bit larger. And these expand our lattice, move our rare earths further apart, and we consider that as a negative chemical pressure. And I also want to highlight at this point that the XY pyrochlorides are really an ideal family to look at with something like chemical pressure because they do live in this rich phase space. And this isn't generically true anywhere you might look. So for the case of homium titanate, you can make the same sorts of substitutions, titanium for germanium or tin, and it really doesn't have very much effect on the low temperature magnetism. You maintain a dipolar spin-ice state. Okay. So you might wonder, does changing the non-magnetic B-site have any effect on your spin anisotropy? And I'm not going to spend very long describing our crystal electric field measurements, but I do want to tell you that we have done detailed measurements of each of these systems, and we do find that their anisotropy is XY-like. So I'm showing an example of our measurements on erbium titanate, and then this is the fit from our crystal field Hamiltonian, and our net anisotropy is XY-like because G perpendicular is larger than GZ. So now coming back to this very nice phase diagram, I want to look in a little bit more detail at each of these ordered phases. So the first two that I'll point to are psi 2 and psi 3 in red and pink, or red and yellow. And these are the basis vectors that make up the gamma 5 irreducible representation. And in fact, at the mean field level, you would not expect to see any distinction between these two states, and you need some sort of other effect like order by disorder or virtual crystal fields to break this degeneracy. And because I'm dealing with powders, and these two states are in general indistinguishable, I might interchangeably refer to gamma 5 or psi 2. Another state is this gamma 7 Palmer-Chalker state, and it is an XY antiferromagnetic state like the gamma 5 states. In all three of these states, the spins are antiferromagnetically coupled, and they all lie in their local XY planes. And then the final state on this phase diagram in blue is gamma 9, and this is a very different state to the others. It's a ferromagnet state, first of all. And second of all, the spins are canted away from their local XY plane, actually with a net ferromagnetic alignment towards the local 111. So looking for representative materials that might lie on this phase diagram, we know a few. We know that ytterbium titanate and ytterbium stannate should lie in this gamma 9 region, as we've heard a lot about earlier today. We know that erbium titanate lies in this psi 2 region. But up until recently, we haven't known any XY systems that lie in the gamma 7 region. OK, so as I've told you, we have two magnetic cations and four non-magnetic cations, yielding us eight total materials. And I realize that this is way too many compounds to try to keep track of in a single talk. So I'm going to narrow the focus down a bit. And I'm going to break up the remainder of my talk into two parts. The first is going to focus on an ytterbium pyrochlor, ytterbium germanate. And it's a positive chemical pressure analog of ytterbium titanate. And then I'll switch gears and talk about erbium platinate, which is sort of a negative chemical pressure of erbium titanate. So let's look at these specific heats in a little more detail. One thing that I find really striking when looking at this is that they all have this common form to their low temperature specific heat, these four compounds with varying non-magnetic B-site. In each case, there's a sharp low temperature anomaly, and then at a higher temperature, there's a much broader anomaly. And because we know the crystal electric field schemes for these materials, we've measured them with inelastic neutron scattering. We know that this broad anomaly has nothing to do with something like a low-lying crystal electric field Schottky anomaly. It really is related to spin degrees of freedom within the ground state doublet. So from earlier bulk characterizations, we knew that ytterbium stannate, platinate, and titanate all have a transition with ferromagnetic character. But recently, there's been some bulk characterization that show that ytterbium germanate had a transition with antiferromagnetic character. And so that's what we wanted to look at. So here I'm showing you some of our powder neutron diffraction measurements on ytterbium germanate. And what you might appreciate from looking at the data is that our sample is really tiny. They're prepared by high pressure methods. And so sample size is a huge limitation on what we can do. But nonetheless, we are able to measure enhancements in the magnetic Bragg reflections on top of these structural magnetic Bragg peaks. And by looking at the relative intensities through symmetry analysis, we were able to determine that the ordered state of ytterbium germinate falls in the gamma 5 manifold. And so these are the yellow and red regions. As I told you earlier, we can't distinguish between the two basis vectors for a powder. You would need to do a more sophisticated measurement that requires a single crystal. But I think it's still interesting that we know now that positive chemical pressure takes you across this phase boundary, away from this blue region and towards the gamma 5 region. And I'll also mention that I'm schematically using arrows on this phase diagram, but they're not really meant to point to any specific set of exchange parameters. They're just schematic. Okay. So we know that the inelastic neutron scattering of ytterbium titanate is very interesting. So let's find out what's going on in ytterbium germinate. So the way that this slide is set up, I have the magnetic specific heat on the left-hand side. And I've labeled four temperatures, A through D. And they're temperatures that are both above and below both specific heat anomalies. And on the right-hand side, I have four powder inelastic neutron scattering plots corresponding to the four temperatures. So if we look first at B, which is at the center of the broad specific heat anomaly, you see that there's an intense inelastic blob of scattering down here near Q equals 0. And it's very diffusive. There's nothing sharp there. And it extends out with a broad band or a broad continuum of scattering. And this looks quite a lot already like what we saw for ytterbium titanate earlier. But I think what's more remarkable is that as we cool the sample down further, first to 0.9 and then well below TN, 60 millikelvin, this scattering doesn't appreciably evolve. It maintains the same form. There's some redistribution of spectral weight, but the overall form remains the same. And it is definitely associated with this broad anomaly, not with this sharp anomaly. As I told you, ytterbium germinate has an antiferromagnetic dipole ordered state, yet these excitations don't look anything like the spin waves you would expect to see in an ordered antiferromagnet. If anything, because the spectral weight is so strongly centered towards Q equals 0, it looks more like a ferromagnet. And moreover, it doesn't look ordered in any way. So I kind of gave away the punchline, which is that these excitations look remarkably like those of ytterbium titanate, but they also have a striking resemblance to those of ytterbium stannate. And so we think there's a ubiquitous form to these spin excitations with a common origin. And in each case, for each of these three materials, these excitations do primarily form in the vicinity of that broad specific heat anomaly and then change very little passing through their TN or TC. And then I think another point worth highlighting is that they do have different dipole ordered states, just to reiterate. Ytterbium germinate is an antiferromagnet, while these two materials are both ferromagnets. So if you wanted to really convince yourself that these are the wrong spin excitations for a gamma 5 antiferromagnet, you can compare them to those of erbium titanate on the right-hand side. And erbium titanate is a very well-behaved gamma 5 antiferromagnet. When it orders at 1.2 Kelvin, it also forms these very sharp spin waves that take a minima near 1 inverse angstrom, the expected antiferromagnetic zone center. And moreover, there's a lack of scattering near Q equals 0. There's a depletion here, where that is where the majority of our spectral weight is centered. Okay. So for the remainder of my talk, I'm going to switch gears now to the erbium family so we can take a closer look at this specific heat. So in comparison to what I told you about the ytterbium systems, these materials do not have a common form to their low temperature specific heats. There's a variety of behaviors that we see here. So the first one I'll point out is erbium stannate. You might see that it has this high temperature broad anomaly, but no sharp anomaly. Actually, we've learned recently, there's a preprint on the archive from Sylvain Petit that shows that erbium stannate orders below 100 millikelvin. And this heat capacity data doesn't extend down that far. Then the next two materials we can look at are erbium germinate and erbium titanate. They're both gamma 5 antiferromagnets, and they both order above 1 Kelvin. And all of their entropy is contained in a single sharp anomaly. They don't have this two-peak structure. They don't have one of these broad anomalies. And then the final material, the one that I'm going to be discussing, is erbium platinum. And we saw something that we found really interesting in erbium platinum, which is that at the exact temperature that erbium titanate is ordering, it looks like its entropy is beginning to go up, like maybe it wants to order. But then it plateaus into a broad anomaly that forms a shoulder on its sharp anomaly. And so we wanted to know what's going on with its low temperature magnetism. OK, so I'm going to show the same types of experiments. First, powder neutron diffraction. And for this material, we find a Palmer-Chalker gamma 7 ordered state below its 300 millikelvin nail temperature. And so this is the powder neutron diffraction data and the symmetry analysis that we did to determine that. And so what we see is that as a function of B-site cation, we're moving across this line here from psi 2 to gamma 7. And one thing that's interesting about platinum is that, unlike germanium, where it's a very clear case of positive chemical pressure, that's a very big size difference. Platinum is actually almost a lattice match for titanium. It's negligibly larger, far less than 1% shift in lattice parameter. And so just trying to understand this in terms of a naive chemical pressure picture, you don't get very far. But if we think more about the actual natures of titanium and platinum, we can maybe understand this. Because titanium is in the 3D block, and its 4+ oxidation state has the closed electron configuration of argon. Whereas platinum is very different. It's in the 5D block. It has a lot more electrons. And so you could imagine that that's affecting bonding and all sorts of things. But also, when you remove its 4 valence electrons, you're left with a 5D6 configuration. And so even though it's non-magnetic, you have these empty 5D orbitals that are able to facilitate superexchange. OK, so this is structured the same way the inelastic neutron scattering data I showed you before was, the specific heat with 4 labeled temperatures. And then these profiles correspond to the marked temperatures. And so right away, at the broad anomaly, you can see that we're developing these very intense short-range correlations that are centered around one inverse angstrom, which is our antiferromagnetic ordering wave vectors. And so already, we can see that this is looking a lot more conventional than in the case of ytterbium germanate. First of all, these are the right wave vectors. And then second of all, they're changing as a function of temperature. As we pass through Tn, well below it to 60 millikelvin eventually, we see that that diffuse scattering on the antiferromagnetic wave vector segregates into well-formed, resolution-limited Bragg peaks and a sharp inelastic mode. So it is difficult, because these samples are powder, to say definitively whether the spin excitations are conventional or unconventional. But they're certainly more conventional than in the case of ytterbium germanate. So we have one idea for what might be taking place up at this broad anomaly, which is that we know erbium titanate is a gamma 5 magnet, and erbium platinum and erbium stannate are gamma 7 magnets. And so if there is going to be phase competition, it's probably going to arise between those two XY antiferromagnetic phases. So what might be taking place here is that the U1 manifold is being selected, reducing the degrees of freedom in which you can fluctuate, so releasing some entropy, but maintaining these fluctuations within the U1 manifold until you reach a lower temperature where one state can be uniquely selected. OK, so taking these 8 compounds as a whole, we've realized that you can kind of nicely organize their behaviors into 2 sets. So the first is erbium titanate and erbium germanate. And for them, they both order above 1 Kelvin, whereas our other 6 materials, the 4 ytterbiums and the other 2 erbium systems, all order quite a bit below 1 Kelvin. Then when we look at their specific heats, we see that these 2 materials have a single sharp specific heat anomaly that contains the full Arlon 2 entropy, whereas in these 6 materials, there's a 2-stage entropy release with a broad anomaly at high temperature and a sharp anomaly at low temperature. These points relate specifically to the titanates, because they're the most well-studied of these families. But we know from erbium titanate that there's no real discrepancies in the literature on this material. There aren't any significant disagreements on what its low-temperature phase behavior are, whereas, as we've heard, there's strong sensitivity to disorder in ytterbium titanate. For erbium titanate, once again, we know that there's conventional spin waves below Tn, whereas, at least in the case of the ytterbium compounds, we know that there are these very unconventional spin excitations. And so what we would suggest is that these behaviors in the right-hand column correspond to things that are indicative of strong phase competition. And so that just nicely brings me to my conclusion point, which is that in addition to these 3 points that are already supported by theory, we think that this last point could be the final ingredient as an experimental signature of phase competition. And so I will point out that at the present time, this model of phase competition doesn't necessarily account for the presence of multiple heat capacity anomalies. But at least from an empirical standpoint, it would seem to be the case that that is a signature of phase competition. And then there's one other thing I'd like to highlight, which is that in the ytterbium systems, the phase competition arises between gamma 5 and gamma 9. So it's 1 ferromagnetic, 1 antiferromagnetic phase. And in the erbium pyrochlorates, it would be between gamma 5 and gamma 7. And in the whole set of materials, we have this strong phase competition that results in all three ground states, gamma 5, gamma 7, and gamma 9. So it isn't simply a ground state dependent property. It's something that seems to be really related to just the phenomena of phase competition. Okay, thank you.
It was like perfect timing, just like Japanese train.
What's the G answer values for the erbium platinum compound?
Yeah, so it actually has, that's something that's kind of surprised us. We looked systematically at all four of our erbium systems. And although when you look at just the inelastic neutron scattering profiles, they're very similar. There's very little differences to the overall scheme. But when we actually compute out the G tensors, erbium titanate and erbium germanate, which are the gamma 5 antiferromagnets, both have ratios of their G tensor around 2. But erbium platinum and erbium stannate, which are the gamma 7 magnets, have G tensor ratios higher than 20, 27 for the platinum and 50 for the.
What are the values for the two?
So G perpendicular is pretty constant between the four. And then it's just the value of GZ that varies. So GZ gets very small for the platinate. Far less than one.
So what's the moment about then?
About 3.5 Bohr magnetons. And that's roughly 3 Bohr magnetons of that moment is in the dipole order. That's the refined moment from the neutron diffraction. Yeah, and I should have actually mentioned that the majority of the moment in the ytterbium systems seems to be tied up in those inelastic modes, whereas in the erbium systems, it's a far more conventional breakdown.
It's in the ballpark estimate for the nearest neighbor contribution to the dipoles for that case would be quite large, right?
Mm-hmm. So it's about a factor 4 or 5 smaller than spin ice.
Yeah, but then it would be about 9 Kelvin for spin ice for 10 Bohr magneton in a spin 1/2 representation.
So about 2 Kelvin for?
Yeah, a factor, as you said,
yeah.
Right? And so so the nearest neighbor model could be quite far from being quantitative to describe erbium platinum, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's something that we believe as well. We think that the platinum.
So where would be the 1/2/1/2 in your powder?
Oh, in the diffraction pattern?
Yeah.
Yeah, 1/2/1/2 is kind of off the screen, actually. But there's no peak.
Yeah, 1/1/1 is the first one.
1/1/1 is the first reflection. Yeah.
There's no diffuse.
No. Even in the inelastic, there's not really much spectral weight down there.
Right? Any other question?
What's the entropy above the peak in this material?
In the platinum?
Yes.
It's about 50-50.
50% of log 2?
50% of log 2 comes out in the broad anomaly, and about 50% comes out in the sharp anomaly. And for the ytterbium systems, it's about 20-80. 80 in the broad, 20 in the sharp.
Okay, so if there is no other question, I'd like to thank the speaker.